The impact of climate change and drought on the nation's food system is a big worry, not just to farmers, but to all of us. What will we do to feed ourselves on a warming planet? Last week, we talked about how restaurants are serving up a much different seafood menu than they did even a decade ago. And with rising water temperatures, those changes are expected to continue into the future. So what other foods might better be suited for a warming planet? Anna Gibbs, a reporter at Science News that's based in Washington, D.C., wrote about six foods that might not be part of your diet now, but might be in the future. Welcome, Anna.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. We talked last week about how climate change is affecting the seafood that lands on our dinner plates. But obviously, more than just seafood is impacted. How else is the food we love at risk?
Yeah, so climate change is already affecting the food that we grow, right? We're already seeing more extreme weather events, temperatures getting hotter. We're seeing higher variation in rainfall, so both droughts and floods. And the problem is that on top of that, we have put all of our eggs into a really small number of baskets when it comes to the food that we're eating. The world population relies on getting 80% of their energy intake from just 13 crops. And so if you think about all the different things that you eat, just 13 of those are really prominent.
Wow.
Yeah. And 50% of our calorie intake comes from just three crops, which is wheat, rice, and maize. So experts are worried because relying on such a small number of options is really risky.
All right. I know that you came up then with a list of six foods that could become more popular as the climate changes. Let's go through them.
First, we have millet. It's a type of ancient grain. It's a great source of carbs. It can be made into a lot of different things, including beer. And it's already a staple crop in many countries around the world. Then we have the Bambara groundnut. It's a lesser well-known crop. It's a type of legume, sort of like soybeans. It's a good source of protein. And that one's native to sub-Saharan Africa. Then I had to get some seafood on the list. So we had mussels. Studies show that seafood will become a bigger part of our diets in the future. And mussels are cool because they can be farmed in the ocean with low inputs. The problem with mussels is that they're threatened by ocean acidification. And so that's why we also added kelp to the list. You can grow mussels with kelp, and that's really beneficial for the mussels. And then kelp is just awesome because it sucks a lot of carbon out of the air. It's kind of like having a forest underwater. So that's a really powerful duo. Then we have the enset. It's a funky plant grown primarily in Ethiopia. It's called the false banana because it looks like a banana tree, but you can't actually eat its fruit. You eat its starchy stem. And it's also called the tree against hunger because you can harvest it year round. The last one on the list is cassava. It's a starchy root vegetable from South America, good source of carbs. But like millet, it's already grown around the world. So it's a staple crop. It's one of the top 13 crops that I mentioned earlier. And you may think that you haven't tried cassava before. I thought that I hadn't, but I actually learned that it's found in the tapioca balls in bubble tea.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, and I actually, you know, used to feed millet to my parakeets.
Right. Someone else told me that too.
Yeah. But I had a vegetarian friend of mine, and a few decades ago, he said, you got to try this thing called millet, because he wasn't eating any wheat products either. He was allergic to wheat. And it's delicious. I mean, it's a kind of thing you want to put sauce on it.
That's great. And they are gluten-free, which is a really awesome alternative. Yeah.
Now tell me how you chose these.
Yeah. So after talking with some food experts, it became clear pretty quickly that the whole exercise of putting together a list was in and of itself antithetical to the key takeaway that I was hearing from these scientists, which was that we shouldn't really be making a short list, right? We should be making a really, really long list. We should be adding to the list. So having to choose just six was challenging. But I had four basic criteria that all of the foods on this list check off. So the first thing was obviously their resilience, so their ability to live in the changing climate. The second one is their nutritional quality. So just inherently, are they nutritious? But also, how will that nutritional makeup be affected by climate change? So one concern with higher levels of carbon dioxide is that it can actually make some crops less nutritious, which is obviously a problem going forward. And there's some crops that grow better in higher CO2 than others. So that's being studied right now. And then the third criteria, is it sustainable? Is it environmentally friendly? We don't want to be making a worse future for our food while we're investing in these crops, right? And then the final consideration was, is this food consumer friendly? Will people buy it? Which is really important.
Yeah, yeah. And not only is it important, but can we find these things in the U.S.? I mean, where are you going to get a Bambara groundnut? I mean, there's cassava I have seen around the specialty food stores, but a Bambara groundnut, not so much.
Right, right. And, you know, maybe someday, though, and that's the hope, is that someday you might actually find the Bambara groundnut as a dairy alternative at your local Starbucks. There's a company that's making Bam Nut Milk, is what it's called. And it's a dairy-free alternative, just like soy milk or almond milk or oat milk. So, you know, hopefully someday it'll get to that point.
Now, I know that millet is out there because I've eaten it, but I'm not... Do people know about it? Will they know about it now that we're talking about it?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because the UN actually declared next year to be the International Year of Millets. I'm not sure if you've wow. heard of that distinction before.
No,
but,
I hadn't.
So they gave quinoa that honor back in 2013, and we all saw how that turned out. I mean, everyone's into quinoa these days, so hopefully a similar fate will come to the millet.
And before we go, Anna, what can we do at home or during our grocery trips to diversify what we eat?
Yeah, so I think the takeaway for consumers is to be intentional about trying new things, eating a range of different items, even looking for diversity within a particular type of food. Like, think how apples have lots of varieties. That's great because it increases resilience, right? We're putting our eggs in more baskets. If one variety isn't cut out for certain conditions, another will probably make it. Whereas a crop like bananas, there's a lots of varieties, but we tend to really just buy one at the stores. So looking for diversity where you see it, be willing to try new things on the shelf, be open to these menu changes that are going to happen. And also, we do hold a lot of power as consumers to bring some of these more sustainable options to the forefront. So I'm really curious to see if kelp will someday take off like quinoa did.
Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks so much, Ira.
Anna Gibbs, a reporter at Washington-based Science News.